Hello, Billy Patterson here. Nearly 30 years ago on my Castaway programs, I talked with local people about their lives. Stay tuned and listen again to the following fascinating story. My guest this week is Nellie Gallagher from Garton. Now, the name might not leap out at you, but if you've ever been out to visit Glenbeg Castle, all the catering is done by Nellie, but Nellie had a long and distinguished career working at the castle for Mr. Michael Henney prior to that. The first question, when and where you were born, Nellie?
I was born in Dunluce a long time ago, in 1929, and I went to school there and lived there until I was 16.
Right, well, we'll stay in Dunluce for the minute. Tell me about your parents, Nellie.
Well, my father's name was Brian Gallagher. I didn't change my name when I got married.
Right.
And my mother's name was Margaret. And there were 7 children in my family, 5 boys and 2 girls.
So you're at the tail end, are you?
No, I was the second eldest.
Oh, were you? Right.
And my youngest sister died when she was 2.5 with whooping cough.
Dear me.
So I was the only girl then in the family.
And a spoiled brat you became, is that right?
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so, Billy.
What did your father work at, Nellie?
My father worked for the Donegal County Council.
Right.
And for the Forestry Department.
And your mum? What was her name?
My mother was Margaret. Her maiden name was McGeady. And my mother...
Was she a Dunluce woman as well?
She was. She was a housewife, but we used to make tweed. All the houses in the area at the time, they were all made tweed just to make a living. And it was what was done in the house for a good number of years.
Did both parents get involved in this, or just your mother?
Just my mother, yeah.
And she sat on what? She had. How did she work at tweed?
Well,
weaving?
First of all, we had the wool. We had sheep, and the wool. We got the wool from the sheep, and we dyed the wool, and then you teased it, and you they had a spinning wheel, and you spun it, and you sent it to the weaver then to make the yarn, and you made the tweed from that.
Oh, and so it's a spinning wheel that your mother worked at home?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you ever learn to use it?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Did
we
you?
All had to do it when we were young. All the young girls had to do it.
Do you need? Does it take a lot of practice?
Well, it's probably, if you're used to it, you know, from your early days, it's not no big deal. But maybe to start off from scratch, you know, it would be not really.
Well, did the boys and all, everybody lent a hand?
Yeah, as many people as could, yes.
Well, and that was just to supplement the income?
It was to supplement the income, yes. Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of spare cash in there.
There wasn't a lot of spare cash. Not at all, not like nowadays.
What were your school days like?
School days, to me, were very pleasant. I always liked school. And at the time, there was very few people going for secondary education because we didn't have the schools. Especially in a place like Dunluce, the nearest school, the nearest secondary school would have been Letterkenny. So unless you could afford it, you know, there was no very few scholarships or anything to go in then.
Mm. Do you remember your teachers?
I remember my teachers. Both of them were McBrides. They weren't husband and wife, but Mr. and Mrs. McBride.
Hmm. And they weren't married?
No,
sure,
well, both of them were married,
but
yeah.
To other McBrides, yeah.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Many in your class?
There would have been about 30.
Right, and the whole school, how many would have been in the whole school?
Would have been over 100 pupils.
Would there? Mm-hmm. And 2 teachers?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Did you do the old barefoot to school in the summer trick?
We did indeed.
Mm, yeah. I think all of us did that. I did it too.
Did you?
I think we all did it.
Really?
Yeah, in the summer, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. I mean, you kept your shoes for Sunday.
Well, we were delighted when we could take off our shoes going to school.
I know, it was great.
Even though we left home, maybe with the shoes on, we carried them in our hands to school then.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do at this stage. You know, we're going to give you 6 pieces of music to take with you to this island. What would your first choice be, and why, Nelly, would you choose it?
My first choice is The Old House, sung by the Pattersons.
Never heard of them.
Didn't you? Oh, I forgot you were one of the Pattersons.
Very good. Thanks.
The reason I'm picking this song is it reminds me of Mr. McElhinney and Glenveagh. It was one of his favourite songs. He invited these young people out to Glenveagh a few times to entertain his guests, and that was his first choice, was The Old House, and that's the reason I'm picking The Old House.
All right, we better hear it then.
Yeah.
Of the Pattersons and The Old House. It is a nice song, that. That was Christine singing there.
That was Christine. Mm. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Good. So when you were a young lass, you know, you sort of weren't dressed up to the nines. You just made enough to keep the wolf from the door and eat good food. And I mean, there were no luxuries in your life,
were
there?
There was no luxuries, but we were never hungry.
It's good.
Everybody had enough to eat, yeah. And everybody had enough clothes. Everybody was alike, so there was nobody anything different.
Mm.
And we were quite happy with our life.
Did you go to dances and things like
we
that?
We did. We had a hall in Dunluce at the time.
Not there now, is it?
It's not there anymore. Well, the hall is still there, but it's not. There's no dances been running now anymore. But we always went to that from we were 15, I suppose.
Yeah.
And
I had up all the talent.
Pardon, yeah, that's for sure.
And did they come from all over the place?
They came from all over the place, yeah. There wasn't that many cars, you know, going then, but people came on bicycles.
So this, and that territory is very hilly.
It is.
If you want to go anywhere in that area, in the Dunluce area, you're up and down hills all the time.
People were used to cycling at that time, and I think they were much healthier than they are now.
Well, I think that stands to reason, doesn't it? If you spend your time sitting in your backside pushing a pedal in a car, it couldn't keep you healthy.
Yes, for sure.
Cycling bicycles up hills certainly will, I'll tell you. What age were you when you left school in LA?
I left school at probably 14 and a half.
As young as that?
That's right.
And what did you do then?
Well, my first job was I came to Glenveagh when I was 16.
Straight to the castle?
Straight to the castle.
From school?
Yeah, from school.
Oh, you didn't know what it was to work anywhere else then, did you?
No, I didn't work any place.
Well, what was your job with it? We're talking here about Glenveagh Castle, a magnificent place on the shores of Loch Veagh.
That's right.
Right, well, what were you then?
That summer, I wanted to do dress designing, and I was going to Dublin to do dress designing. And that summer they were looking for somebody at Glenveagh Castle to work in the kitchen. And I came there in May, and that was 1946. The first year Mr. McLennan came back after the war. He hadn't been there from 1939.
When had he bought the place? Prior to the war?
Oh yeah, he bought it in 1937.
Did he?
He rented it for a few years before that from Kingsley, from Mrs. Porter.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Porter was lost, or he went missing mysteriously off Inishbofin Island in 1933.
Was there anything funny about that disappearance? Or
I really don't know, you know.
Could it have been an accident?
It could have been an accident.
But people think that maybe there was more to it.
People think otherwise, you know, but like we're not quite sure.
But why would any, just to digress for a wee minute, why would anybody have any reason to push his head below the waves, as it were?
Oh, I really don't know.
You don't
but it's
know.
Just some of the local people say that he paid the boatman to take him off the island. But, you know, that might only be rumours. But he went missing and his body was never found afterwards. So Mr. McElhenney was a pupil of his at Harvard University.
Ah, is that
So he came as a guest of Mrs. Porter's in 1934, he and his mother, and then he rented the castle for a few years, and he bought it in 1937. So then the war broke out in 1939, and he had to go back to America. They left early that summer, you know, probably the war broke out in September, I think.
Yes.
And he went back to Philadelphia. And then, until 46 then, he didn't come to Glenveagh, but he came back in 46 after the war. And that's the year I went to Glenveagh.
Well, before we get on to the story of your life at Glenveagh, could I ask you what your second record might be now?
My second record now is Amazing Grace. Yeah. And the reason I'm picking this one is by Valerie Dunbar.
Mm.
It was one of my mother's favourite songs. And I want to dedicate this to my mother,
you can
who
do
is
that.
Long gone.
Right.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the days to sing God's praise than when we first began.
That was Valerie Dunbar and Amazing Grace. Nice song, that.
It is.
An old song, Nelly. Your mother used to sing that song?
No, she didn't sing it, but she always liked it.
She always liked it.
Yeah.
Wow. You've just gone to work at Glenveagh in the kitchen. But before that, you said that you were heading for Dublin to do dress designing.
That's what I wanted to do.
Well, where did you get this? Where did this come from, this dress design? Come from working with the wool and the home and the tweed? And
well, I was always interested in dressmaking and sewing. And I thought I would like to do this.
Mm.
So then I came to Glenbey that summer, and then that was the end of the story.
That ended your career as a dressmaker. You're only a wee lassie now, and you're working in the kitchens in Glenbey.
Right.
What were the kitchens like in those days?
Yeah, well, we had a big indoor staff. The housekeeper at that time was from County Antrim,
mm-hmm.
near Antrim town, between Reynoldstown and Antrim. And her husband was...
Remember the name?
Whiteside, Mrs. Whiteside.
Right.
Her husband was the butler. And they worked for Lord Mazarine, who owned Antrim Castle, before they came to work for Mrs. Porter. They came to Glenbey to work for Mrs. Porter.
Right.
And they were well used to going to London and houses in Scotland and different big houses, you know, they worked in.
Mm.
So it was just like upstairs, downstairs, if you know that program.
I do, yeah.
I came to help. She was a cook housekeeper, so I came to assist her in the kitchen. And I always liked cooking as well.
Mm.
And
was it like we see, like an upstairs, downstairs, the big Victorian kitchen?
It was...
Or was it more modern than that?
Well, the kitchen didn't change a lot, really. It was more modern, you know.
Mm.
But there were stone floors and...
Gas or electricity or what?
Solid fuel range.
Right.
We didn't have any gas or electricity at all. So
right.
We had to light the fire very early in the morning to get the breakfast going.
Was that you? Was that your job now?
It was my job,
What
yes.
time do you get up in the morning?
We were usually up about 6:45, because the housekeeper and the butler had to get their early morning tea in bed at 7 o'clock.
Did they?
And that had to be taken upstairs to them at 7.
Heavens above.
Uh-huh.
Right, go on.
And then we had the staff breakfast at 8 o'clock, and the guest breakfast was at 9.
Now, the staff, how many of the staff are you talking about feeding here?
Well, there'd be about 10.
Indoor staff?
Indoor staff.
So what had you got, chambermaids?
We had the cook, housekeeper and the butler, and a few chambermaids, houseboys.
Right.
Hall boys, kitchen help, and just the general workers.
Okay.
And the chauffeur.
And the chauffeur.
Mm.
So you had about 10 or 12 for breakfast, and that was the staff breakfast.
That was the staff breakfast.
That's at 8 o'clock.
And that
right.
was a sit down meal.
And you were heavily involved in cooking that.
That's right.
Right. Then you fed the house guests at
the
9.
The house guests then were at 9.
How many could there be then?
Well, there could be 16 or 18, depending if the house was full.
Jeepers.
It would be. Usually the ladies stayed in bed for breakfast, and the men came down to the dining room, and then they would discuss their days, whatever was going to happen during the day. And then the lunch was at 1:15.
Let me go back. I'm intrigued with the idea of the ladies all staying in bed for the breakfast. That meant that you had to trundle around the different rooms.
The trees, yeah.
And
they would give their order the night before, and we would set up the trays. And depending on what time they wanted breakfast, they would always say, you know, if it was 8:30, 9 o'clock, or 9:30, or whatever time they wanted breakfast, they would get it. And the men then would come down, or the gentlemen would, to the dining room, and they would have theirs at 9. And
discuss the day's
event,
activities,
whatever they were going to do, fishing or stalking or going to driving or whatever was happening during the day.
Where did these people come from?
Well,
these guests.
They came from all over the world.
Did they?
Yes, they knew people from all over the world.
They were coming specifically to shoot or to fish, stalk the deer. Which abounded in
Glenbey. Well, the stalking was in August, from August until October.
Right.
Miss McLennan usually came in May and stayed until October. But during that time then, he would go off, maybe he would go to the Chelsea Flower Show in London every year.
Mm.
He went to Monte Catini in Italy for the health place.
Mm.
He might go to the Greek islands. He didn't stay the full 4 or 5 months at Glenbey. He would stay about 16 or 18 weeks. That was the longest That was the time, you know, spaced out during the whole summer that he would stay at Glenveagh. And then while he was at Glenveagh, he entertained his friends.
Lavishly.
Yes.
Well, is that where you learned to do your cooking?
That's where I learned my cooking from Mrs. Whiteside, who was the cook at that time.
Well, I'm going to talk to you in a moment about Mrs. Whiteside, but I'm going to ask you at this stage, Nelly, what your third choice of music to take with you to the island might be.
My third choice is Danny Boy.
Right. Anybody want in particular singing it?
Well, I would like Anna McGoldrick.
See, she can sing soft as well. That was nice, wasn't it?
That was lovely, Peter.
Yeah. Had you a reason now for choosing Danny Boy, Nelly?
Well, my husband's name is Danny.
Well, that's a pretty good start.
And it was one of Mr. McElhinney's favourite songs as well.
It looks like we're playing Mr. McElhinney's choice here today.
That's right.
But you were telling me about some chap who came to visit who loved the song as well. Greek.
Theo Rabanis. He came to Glenveagh when he was about 19 or 20 first. He was a Greek movie actor.
Yeah.
Where he made movies in Greece. And every year after that he came and he was very well known. And he used to go to the local dances with the staff. He even went to the Devlin Hall in Letterkenny here.
Is that right? Did he do the Ways of Tory and the Siege of Venice?
He loved that, yeah. He loved the Irish dancing.
Did he?
And, well, of course, you didn't do a lot of Irish dancing even then in the Devlin Hall, you know. There wasn't a lot of Waves of Tory or...
Ah, no, I was thinking more out in Garten or Churchill, Fox Hall. They would be doing the
Cayley
music.
Uh-huh.
No, you were waltzing around and quick-stepping and two-stepping in Devlin,
right.
Weren't you? So it was one of his, he had to learn to sing this song, didn't he? It became one of his favourites.
He had to learn to sing it. The last year that I went to Hawaii several years with Mr. McElhinney, the last year that we were there in 1986, that's the year Mr. McElhinney died.
Yeah.
This man came as a guest for 1 week and he stayed for the month that we were there. And Danny, my husband, was with us that year. And he wanted to learn Danny Boy. He was playing it on the piano, and the two of them were singing and playing every day. So we bought him the sheet music, and Mr. McElhinney loved that song, and it was the song that they played at his memorial service in Philadelphia when he died.
Henry McElhinney was there from May till October.
Usually he came in May and went back to Philadelphia in October.
Did he come down to the kitchens? Did he get to know you? Did he know the staff well? Did they like him?
They all liked him, yes. He was a very good employer and he was very easy to talk to. He liked everything done properly.
Mm-hmm.
And he left that to the people who were in charge in the house. He didn't give orders to everybody. He just left that to the housekeeper or whoever, the butler, whoever was given the orders. He was very well liked in the locality as well.
Mm.
And I must say it was good employment in the round the garden, Churchill, Creasley area.
Mm.
Because he had a lot of people employed.
Did he pay them well?
He paid them whatever the going rate was at the time.
Yeah.
Which everybody was very satisfied with. Mm. Yeah, there's about 38,000 acres.
Wow.
Inside the deer fence is about 27 miles.
27 miles of a deer fence?
Uh-huh.
And
so
a lot of deer
it's a big
there.
Estate, but it's mostly hills.
Aye.
There's very few little arable land on the estate.
It's just deer country and sheep country.
It is,
and
yeah.
lakes.
And lakes.
Yeah.
That's it.
And it's all fenced.
It's all fenced.
Too many deer. Do you know how many deer would be running there? A couple of hundred deer?
Probably about 700, I think.
As many as that?
Oh, there are, yeah. The red deer.
I didn't know there were that many now.
Oh, there is.
I thought it was just maybe 100 or two.
Oh, no, no.
And he employed a lot of people outside then to
look after. He employed at that time, I would say, about 40 to 45 people outside. He had stocking gillies and fishing gillies and tradesmen and general workers. And
so he was responsible for an awful lot of employment and income in that area, as you said.
He certainly was. Mm-hmm. And
how do you temper him?
Well, I must say, Billy, now, I worked for Mr. McElhinney from 1946 until 1983 when he left Glenfey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I never saw him. He and I never had a word in all those years. And that's something to say.
About 37 years.
Uh-huh. And
did you see him ever lose his temper with other people?
Not really, no. Not really, I must say. He liked everything and everybody, you know, did everything that they should do. But he didn't have a temper as such.
There you are. No. I would have thought he would have had a temper. There you are.
No.
I knew him, but I didn't know him terribly well.
You certainly did. You met him several times.
Umpteen times.
You did indeed.
Many of the time I savoured your cooking as well.
Nights you were out singing there. And
out after it.
Yeah, that's right.
The gardens are renowned the world over. What sort of state were they in? Were they that good whenever you went there? Do you remember?
Well, the gardens were there because Mrs. Adair made the gardens.
This is Cruel John Adair's wife.
Cruel John Adair's wife, yeah.
Yeah. But she was liked, wasn't she?
She was very well liked, they say. Not like he was.
Mm.
But after Miss McElhinney came back, after the war, you know, he got landscape gardeners Jim Russell and Lennon Roper, and they planned the gardens in Mr. McElhinney's own style.
Yeah.
And he brought plants from all over the world. He used to bring a lot from Tasmania and from different places, and they seemed to grow there.
It was well sheltered.
It was well sheltered.
Yeah.
And then they built walls. He built the wall. I remember when the garden wall was built.
Mm.
There was no wall around the garden in the beginning. And he made several steps, you know, around the garden and up to the top of the hill.
Yeah. Maybe we'll take another piece of music at this stage, shall we, Nelly?
Okay.
All right. What would if you... Remember now, you're stuck on an island and you're going to be hearing this music over and over, so you mustn't be getting fed up with it.
Well, now, I would pick the Hills of Donegal.
Sure.
Because I'm out on that island now, and I would love to hear the Hills of Donegal. And I would like to hear it sung by Frank Breslin.
No problem.
Westward I be going across the ocean blue to where
Stay in the castle, you lived in the castle?
Oh, all the indoor staff stayed in the castle, and which was great because we had no we didn't have any
transportation problems.
Right. And you got all your food,
yeah,
and everybody had a uniform, so it didn't cost much to live.
Very good. Did you have a room to yourself, or did you share rooms?
We shared rooms, yes.
Who was your roommate in those early days, do you remember?
Yes, it was a friend of mine from Dunluce. Her name was Mary O'Donnell, and a cousin of mine who was Peggy Ferry,
oh,
who used to share the rooms first.
Right.
And then it changed during the years, you know. There were different people, and people went, and new people came. But we were all very happy. It was like a big, happy family.
Mm.
And we worked long hours while Mr. McElhinney was there. There was no spare time. You would work from morning until maybe 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Would you?
Certainly.
At that age?
You would indeed.
Well, what about time off during the day?
Well, we would always have a few hours off in the afternoon.
Would you? Yes. So, I mean, if you needed to.
Everybody went to bed or went to rest for a few hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. But while the work was to be done, we were all willing to do it. And then when Mr. McElhinney went away, maybe for a few weeks, everybody had lots of time off then. You just put the good with the bad. And there was no such thing as working 40 hours a week.
Mm, I know. Yeah. Just did what had to be done.
You just did what had to be done.
Yeah.
And you put the good with the bad, and you had plenty of time when he wasn't there.
Wasn't it very lonely, though, for a young girl like yourself being stuck there? We're presumably one of the youngest in the whole place.
Not really, no.
We did you not miss the crack?
We didn't, no. We had our own fun there.
Mm.
We were always, I was always happy at Glenbey.
Mm.
And still I am.
Mm. And what about boys and things, dances? I mean, they were out.
Oh, no, no.
Were they not?
No way.
Okay, let me into your guilty secrets. Where did you go to the dancing?
We went to the local dance halls like Trenta and Terman and Chrysler.
So there was no problem with off time then?
Oh, no.
You could get off to go to the dance.
Certainly so.
Yeah.
But we were restricted. We couldn't just go out every night in the week. We had to ask the housekeeper if we wanted to go to a dance.
You had to get permission.
We had to get permission, and you just didn't run every night in the week. Well, first of all, we would be too tired to go every night in the week, and you had to go on maybe on a bicycle, and you weren't running all the time.
No, you were not. Mm. Just far enough distance. Well, where did you meet Danny?
Oh, that was in later years. Before that, I went to America.
All right. Well, we'll leave Danny out of it. Leave Danny out of it for a while. We'll come back to him.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, Mrs. Whiteside was there for quite some time, and you were always working under her, as it were,
in the
kitchen.
That's right. She was there until 1961, and she died in 62.
Right.
But
did you take over then at that stage?
I took over then when Mrs. Whiteside died.
Right. As the chief cook and bottle washer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Before that, in 56, I went to America with Mr. McElhinney in the winter time. I went for several years then.
Why did he bring you there?
Well, he just wanted me to go to work for him in his house.
As
in Philadelphia.
Cook? As cook?
As cook, yeah.
But surely he could have found a cook in Philadelphia.
He could have found lots of cooks in Philadelphia.
Why did he take you?
Well, I wanted to go to America.
Right.
My ambition was to go to America.
Right.
And when he heard tell of this, he asked me if I'd work for him. So I went in October and came back the following May. And he had a lovely house in Philadelphia, in the city, which was a big difference from Glenveagh.
I know.
Because we were living in the centre city, and we had a lovely house there, and had a big staff there as well.
A big house and big staff.
Not as many as Glenveagh now, I must say. We have about seven or eight living in a house in Philadelphia, and which was lovely because we all lived in, and we had nice food, and we had a good standard of living, and we were near everything. We were in the city centre, and I loved Philadelphia from the day I went to it.
It was an awful change for you, wasn't it?
It was a big change, I must say, yeah. But
where was it? Ritter Avenue, was that the address?
Rittenhouse Square.
Oh, was that it?
Rittenhouse Square.
I haven't made a recipe.
Rittenhouse Square.
Now, tell me where Henry got his money. How did he happen to have it?
Well, Mr. Michael Henney's grandparents were from Milford, Remelton area. They were married in Remelton. And then his grandfather died when he was a young man. And his grandmother took the four children to America.
Great-grandfather. Right.
So Mr. McLean's grandfather went to America when he was a young boy of about 9 or 10 years. And they settled and they went to Georgia. And it was he who invented the gas meter in America. So that's where the money came from.
I thought it was the sauce, the Tabasco sauce, Michael Henney's Tabasco sauce.
That was one branch of the family.
Is that right?
That had been cousins.
Really?
But the real money came from the gas meter.
Wow.
So afterwards, Mr. Michael Henney's grandfather then went to Philadelphia and married into society. And of course, money makes money. But the real money came from the gas meter. Mr. McLennan's father then, he came back to Donegal here at about 1923, I think, with Mr. McLennan's sister. When she graduated from college, she told me that her father brought her to Ireland, and he wanted to see where his ancestors came from. And I think that would be one of the reasons why Mr. McLennan came to Glenveagh.
He probably had this root gut.
Yeah.
Feeling of belonging.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Because
he always liked Donegal and the fact that his grandfather came from here.
Yeah. Give me your fifth choice of music now, if you would, Nelly.
I'm still in this desert island.
You're still stuck on the desert island, I'm afraid, yeah.
I think I would like Ave Maria. I like that song.
Any particular reason, just that you like it?
Yeah. I wonder, would you have it sung by Moira Anderson?
Moira Anderson, lovely version of Ave Maria.
Yes, it is.
We have it.
Oh.
That was lovely, wasn't it?
That was
Moira lovely. Anderson. Lovely version of Ave Maria. That was the Bach Gounod version, for those of you who know the difference. Now, you travelled a lot with Henry Michael Henney, Nelly, didn't you?
First of all, I went to Philadelphia in 56, and I went every year then until 66. I went in 61, that's the year we got married.
Wait a minute now. We'd better bring Danny in at this stage. You need somebody to marry. Where did you meet him? At one of the dances out there? Was he working there?
No. In fact, I met him at Glenvie.
Right.
He was out fixing something in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I knew his family for a long time before that.
Mm-hmm.
The Gallaghers.
Yes.
And...
So you spotted this figure in the greenhouse?
No, he spotted me.
Ah. Go on.
Anyway, we got married in 61.
Oh, you're cutting that one short. Eh? Well, I can tell you,
probably,
ladies and gentlemen,
I met him in 59.
If you don't know Nellie Gallagher, I can tell you that Danny Gallagher has an eye for a pretty girl, I'll tell you. And you got married in 61, did you?
61.
61. You have a family, Nellie.
We have.
How many have you?
Four.
Go ahead.
Three girls and one boy. And
all living with you locally, or?
No, we're living on our own now, Billy.
Oh, you're Darby and Joan.
Darby
now.
And Joan, yes.
The folks who live on the hill.
There's
they're all gone.
They're all gone. Well, one of the girls is in Dublin. She's married.
And you're a granny now, are you?
I'm a granny only lately.
All right.
Only lately.
Right.
My daughter is living in Glasgow. She had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
We have one girl, she's still at UCD,
mm-hmm.
and one boy who lives beside us. He built a house beside us.
Very good. So that's the families. You have one locally and they're all doing well, thank God.
Thank God, they are,
God. Now, we'll go back now. You have Danny now, right?
Danny now.
Now, you can go ahead with that story that you were telling me. About the travelling.
I went to 61 was the last year I was in Philadelphia with Mr. McElhinney.
Mm.
Then after we got married, we bought a house in Gurton.
Mm.
And I didn't travel any then until 77, when the children were raised
up. Yeah.
And the first place that I went to then was went to Sydney in Australia.
Big jump, wasn't it? Did you like Sydney?
Sydney was lovely. It was the nicest place, I think, that I was there have been.
Really?
Mm, I love Sydney. We had a very nice house in Sydney. We were there for a month. And
you were cooking now in his house?
I was.
For himself and his guests, or whoever happened to be there?
For himself and his guests. And then we had extra help in the house. He would get local help no matter where we went. My brother went with me. My brother Paddy went with me.
Right, he was...
He was Mr. McElhinney's butler.
That's right.
And they came from Philadelphia. We went in the month of February.
Mm.
And we spent the month of February in Sydney. And then we left Sydney and we went to Tahiti for a week. But that was, we were staying in a hotel.
You didn't have to cook there?
No.
That was a holiday?
That was a holiday.
Right.
From that, then we went to Los Angeles, stayed there for a few days, and then back to Philadelphia, and then I came back to Ireland.
Mm.
I was away probably about 7 weeks that year. That was my first year traveling after Philadelphia, you know, from 61. And then every year after that, then, for about until 86, he rented a house in Hawaii, and I went with him there to Hawaii. So I did quite a bit of travelling.
Well, did you have to learn different dishes in all these different places, or did you just serve them up good Donegal fare everywhere you went?
Well, he had his own likes and dislikes, and no matter where we went, you'd get the same food no matter where you went all over the world.
Mm.
We went to Austria as well. He went to Austria every year to the music festival in Salzburg, and I went there with him. And
what did Danny think about all this travelling? And the kids were not that old. I mean, they were old enough to take care of themselves. But
well, I took...
Here comes the globe-trotting mother.
My youngest girl went to Hawaii with me twice. She went when she was 8 and she went when she was 14.
He paid for all, did he?
He did. And they went to Austria with me as well. And, of course, they all helped in the house while they were there.
Of course they did, yeah.
They all worked and made beds and washed and ironed and did the work.
Well, Nellie, you probably knew Henry Michael Heney as well, if not better, than anybody else.
I did.
I would say that. And there's a lot of controversy and sort of thing around Henry. Now, if I came to you or a newspaper came to you and said, Nellie, here's £50,000 now to tell us all the stories and the small, intimate details of Henry Michael Heney's life, would you be tempted?
No, I wouldn't. I don't really give interviews to anybody.
Except me, and I'm very
grateful.
Except
you, Billy. Not really.
Have you actually been pushed by people to?
I have.
Have you?
The first few years after the Board of Works took over at Glenveagh, there was newspapers and different people there.
All looking for the inside story.
All looking for the inside story.
Aye.
Mm. So I really don't talk to
very good.
Any yeah. interviewers.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's the way it should be. It's a position of trust.
It is.
And even though the man's dead.
Yeah,
you shouldn't
that's true.
Betray the trust.
That's true, yeah. No.
Well, now, Henry died very sadly in 86.
He died very suddenly,
and,
he did.
You continue to work at Glenveagh now because you're running the tea rooms.
I work at Glenveagh now.
Yeah, for the Board of Works or for yourself?
No, for the Board of Works.
Right.
And I must say I enjoy it. I really enjoy working there now because there's so many people coming every day. We had over 102,000, I think, last year. Mm. And there's no damage being done.
That's good, aye.
And,
you have a good man sort of running it, haven't you?
We have there? Indeed. We have indeed.
Kieran O'Keefe.
Yeah, we have. And, it's good employment for local people.
It certainly is.
And that's what
it
we
has
want.
Always been over the years.
It has always it? Been.
Yeah. But you're happy with Glenveagh.
I'm very happy with Glenveagh.
And you've had a fairly good life, haven't you?
I had a very good life.
You can't complain.
I really am not have no complaints.
All right. You better give me your last piece of music, or as time is flying by. What would that be?
My last song on this desert island, I would love to hear Daniel O'Donnell singing Our House is a Home.
There's always a fire in the kitchen. There's always a kettle on the boil. There's no fancy carpets or no telephone, but the one thing our house is a home. A stranger is always welcome, be it any time of night or day. So don't ever feel sad or lonesome, just call as you pass on your way. There's always a fire in the kitchen. There's always a kettle on the boil. There's no fancy carpets or no telephone, but the one thing our house is a home. It's seen many happy and sad times, but it still remains through it all. Though times may have changed all around it, there's still a word of welcome in the hall. There's always a fire in the kitchen. There's always a kettle on the boil. There's no fancy carpets or no telephone, but the one thing our house is a home. There's no fancy carpets or no telephone, but the one thing our house is a home.
Our house is a home. There's no fancy.
And I think that's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Right, back to the desert island. Would you be happy with your own company, Nellie?
Well, I could survive.
But you like company mostly.
I do like company, yes.
Could you build yourself a shelter or a hide?
Oh, I could, yes.
You're pretty good with the hands.
I'm pretty good, yeah.
And there's plenty of fruit and stuff in this island, so you wouldn't starve either.
I wouldn't starve.
Now, we're going to give you the Bible to take with you. There's a couple of other books you might like us to provide for you in this island.
Well, I would like to read maybe Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, I see. You're going to pick
teach you a few tips on how to survive there.
I get you, right. Yeah. And another one?
And the other one that I would like to take is Gone with the Wind.
Great big... it's a great big volume. It'll keep you reading a long time.
I think that would be, you know, keep me going.
It certainly would. And if you had one luxury to take with you, Nelly, what would that be?
Well, I think if I were in a desert island, that I would need lots of wool and knit needles.
You're good with the fingers and the needles, are you?
Yeah, I like knitting or crocheting. So that would keep me going.
Nelly, if you could do it all over again, are there parts of life you would change?
I think I'm quite happy with the way things went. I don't think I would change too much. I enjoyed my life. I enjoyed working at Glenbey. And I still enjoy it.
Yeah, certainly do.
And I might have a few more years there.
I have no doubt that you have. Nelly Gallagher, thank you very much indeed for being my castaway this week.
Okay, thank you, Billy.